The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel
Talk. It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but if only one God created the universe, why is there life only on Earth? With all those planets, with all those galaxies, you'd think God would have created intelligent life all over the place. And yet so many of your Christian friends talk as if the Bible tells us that life is only here on Earth. On the other hand, if there is intelligent life on other planets, would those people or those intelligent beings, whatever they are, would they also need to accept Jesus as Lord and Savior? What if an alien got in a spaceship and visited the Earth, popped out and told us they didn't believe in God? Would that disprove God? Well, these are interesting questions, bizarre questions, but interesting questions, and it raises another question. Some of you are saying, Bob, come on, we just had an important election. You've been warning us for the longest time about a second Obama term, and you're talking about alien life? Illegal aliens would still relate to the subject, but alien aliens? The aliens that live on other planets? Well, yes, I am moving on to other topics. As I promised this week, we're going to do a lot of Bible questions. In fact, last week, I did say that I wouldn't even mention the election at all. I changed my mind and decided to say just a few words, but I promise 99% of our show will go off of that topic. But here's why I realized that I needed to say at least a little. It came to my attention that many of my listeners and readers just need some encouragement. Many people wrote me in the days after the election asking for encouragement. One example here is Peter in Maine. Now, he's been listening to our show and writing us. He's called in before. I've come to think of Peter as a friend. And here's what Peter said to me. Bob, I am very depressed now. I really don't know if I have it left in me to keep fighting the good fight. Of course, I will never agree, bow down, or in any other way aid and abet the Obama nation. But at this point, I am at a loss as to where I should fight, how I should continue to oppose this evil man that our country has reelected. Well, Peter, to quote the words of a different Democratic president, Bill Clinton, I will say that I feel your pain. Is Obama evil? I'm not sure if he's evil. He has done some evil things. He has expressed far too much of a willingness to make deals with evil dictators, but to be completely evil, it would mean his heart inside is completely given over to evil. That I just don't know, because I can't see his heart. I feel for Peter and for so many others who have written me. I took time off on Wednesday, the day after the election, went out to the beach, was not available for a while by line or by phone. And for that reason, I did not get back to some of you as quickly as you may have wished. But I was doing this to pray and to meditate. I decided not to even do any writing, with the exception of one tweet. Gotta love that Twitter. But then Friday, I did finally sit down and write an article about the election for my online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published by Washington Times Communities. You can read that if you're eager to understand my analysis of what happened, why it happened, and mostly where to go from here. But there were reasons I waited a few days even before writing that article. I wanted to let the dust settle so that my thoughts would be reflective rather than couriers of knee-jerk reactions. But let me say, I believe now, I believed yesterday, And I believed last Tuesday night, as I have always believed, that God remains on his throne and has his unknown reasons for allowing things to happen, even when things aren't good. The Bible says all things work together for good to those who love God. Throughout most of 2012, I spent more time on radio-related shows and not as much on politics as I had done in the past. But of course, in the last few months before the election, the proportion was more politically top-heavy again. I felt this was important as I and talk show hosts from coast to coast needed to warn our nation about what was coming and the consequences of an uninformed vote. I will continue to offer my take on current events, but for a few weeks at least, it's time to take a break. So today, I have a show that I believe will lift your spirits. Later on in the second half of our program, I'll be interviewing two fascinating guests with movies to their credit, but we're going to have the unique experience of joining them in the midst of their journey as they tell us about a project they are currently working on, a very inspirational movie about the American flag, aptly named The Flag. I will be talking with John Duffy and David Asbeck. But for now, back to the Bible. I have several interesting questions today about God and his word. Does the idea of life on other planets contradict the Bible? Well, the Bible does not address the question of beings on other planets, but it does speak of another dimension of life called heaven. Still, there is absolutely nothing in Scripture to refute the theory of life on other planets. Having said that, there is usually more than meets the eye when this question is asked. Often the dogma of both Christian and skeptic comes forth. Christians tend to think that the idea of intelligent life on other worlds contradicts their faith, while atheists act as though life on other planets would contradict the Bible. Both are mistaken. To explore this topic, let's begin with what we do know from Scripture. First of all, if there is intelligent life on another world, it would not be superior to human life. According to the Bible, nothing is of more value to God than human beings. It is human beings who are made in his own image, meaning spiritual image. We may someday discover other humans or life equal to that of a human, but nothing superior. Meanwhile, we already know that a type of intelligent life does exist outside the boundaries of our own world. The Bible tells us much about these beings known as angels and demons. Now, we're going to save detail about them for another discussion another day. But for now, one should marvel how quickly people dismiss the idea of angels and demons and yet accuse Christians of being too closed-minded when discussing intelligent life on other worlds. Well, my friend, that is exactly what demons and angels are. Intelligent life existing in other dimensions, if not other worlds. Now you're thinking, but Bob, atheists usually mean mortal life on some other actual planet when bringing up the subject of aliens. True, that's true, but let's face facts. If, and I said if intelligent life did develop elsewhere, it would be far more of a contradiction to evolution than to the idea of God. According to the theory of evolution, life developed randomly, and there would be a trillion-to-one shot that it could accidentally randomly happen again. But if the universe works according to a purpose, if life is the result of a plan put forth by a creator, then it makes perfect sense that he could have created intelligent life in many places. Now, supposing we were visited by aliens who claim there was no God. People talk about that. They just think, if some flying saucer landed and an alien said there's no God, wow, the jig is up. No. All that would mean is that we encountered intelligent beings who did not believe in God. Don't we encounter intelligent beings called humans every day on Earth who don't believe in God? As a matter of fact, not all of our own astronauts have believed in God. We could send somebody to another planet someday and they could say there's no God. All that means is they don't believe in God. God's existence or non-existence is not dependent upon space travel. In Scripture, I should also point out, the concept of the term world kept changing. Think about this. Go back over 2,000 years. When Jesus told his disciples to share the gospel and bring it all over the world, what was the world they knew of? Well, it was Europe, it was Asia, the Middle East, Africa. They didn't know about America. The very notion of crossing the Atlantic Ocean and finding a continent later named America but originally designated the New World and meeting Native Americans to think of that back then would have been about as bizarre as us thinking of finding humanoid life on some far-off planet and then deciding to share the gospel with this new species of human being. The world that Jesus returns to someday may be a whole populated solar system. But Bob, would alien beings even need to hear the gospel? Would they too be expected to believe in Jesus? Well, there's only one God. The God of our world would be the God of their world. As to whether or not they needed to accept Jesus, it would depend upon their own unique history. If, unlike us, they never fell into sin, we would not need to tell them about Jesus because they would already know Jesus. And finally, related to this question, I'm sure you've turned on the History Channel and you've seen all kinds of things about alien beings that visited our world once, and half the time they're trying to attribute miracles of the Bible. There was a very famous book in the 70s called Chariots of the Gods, and those kinds of books are a dime a dozen now. So do we have to accept books like Chariots of the Gods to be open to the possibility that alien beings exist? No, not at all. Those books, you see, attempt to explain away the miracles of the Bible and attribute the miraculous to alien beings instead. We can dismiss such nonsense, all the while embracing the notion of life on other planets as a concept. The Bible exists primarily to carve the way of salvation and forgiveness of sins. It does not seek to answer every mystery of the universe. Christian and skeptic alike should maintain an open mind regarding such speculations. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Going over a couple of different Bible questions that are asked of me frequently. Here's one, and I really like this one. Don't extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence? Referring, of course, to the extraordinary claims of Scripture. This familiar slogan has been repeated often by my atheist friends. Whenever I speak, for example, of the historical validity of the resurrection, whenever I point out that if the same amount of eyewitnesses and historians who claimed Jesus rose from the dead merely claimed that Jesus gave a speech or that Jesus started a revolution, nobody would doubt it. And then they smile and they say, extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. If he really rose from the dead, that's extraordinary. Well, yes, but I tend to resist that phrase, extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. To me, either we have evidence or we don't. It's either good evidence or it isn't. Our process for examining historical evidence must be objective. If we're going to begin with the bias that miracles are impossible, then no amount of evidence will ever be enough. Now then, let us leave the field of history for a moment and venture into science. Another discipline where people believe they have dismissed God once and for all. Nothing in science is proven unless it's repeatable and observable. Although microevolution, changes within the same species, can be observed, macroevolution, changes from one species to another, are not being observed. Neither would an evolutionist make such a claim, because they claim it would take, in some cases, millions or billions of years for that to even happen. Evolution does not merely teach that man came from ape-like creatures. It teaches that all species were once related. Birds, reptiles, mammals, fish, going all the way back to a single-celled amoeba, all related. Now, if this were true, we should find literally billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of missing link fossils. Now, knowing that we don't even come remotely close, evolutionists will still point to a handful of alleged fossils, very disputed amongst other scientists. Even scientists who are not Christians will dispute these things. But they cling to these findings as clear, abundant evidence for macroevolution. At this point, I just have to make a simple observation. Claiming that all species were once related is an extraordinary claim. Whatever happened to extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Back to our program. If it sounds like we've had shorter segments and that we're moving more quickly into commercial breaks, well, there's a reason for that. Let me explain. You see, we're having shorter segments and we're moving more quickly into commercial breaks. What I'm doing is when I bring our guests on during the second half of the show, when possible, I like to give guests an interview without commercial interruption. So we're getting rid of our commercials a little earlier. Continuing now with Bible questions. Here's one that was sent to me not long ago. Bob, I have heard it said that a sin is a sin is a sin, implying that all sins are of the same magnitude and that there are no big sins and no small sins. In essence, they are all the same size. What may make one sin seem longer than another is the effects it has on the sinner, his family, and the people around him, combined with the consequences that may come about sometimes decades down the line as a result of this sin. Could you provide scripture that would explain why you agree or disagree with that statement and why? Thanks. Well, boy, this is one of those things where there's some truth to it and it's not completely true. Technically, yes, it's true. A sin is a sin is a sin. It's not written exactly like that. But at the beginning of Romans, since you want scripture, in Romans 1, Paul gives a whole list of many different kinds of sins. Now, some of the things he puts on the list are what we would call the big sins. Murder is up there. Sexual sin is up there. At least sins that humans usually think of as the big ones. I think we make sexual sin a bigger sin than it is, but that is a sin. However, on the same list as sexual sin, on the same list as cold-blooded murder, we see stuff like gossip. We see stuff like being disobedient to parents. And the Apostle Paul says that these different kinds of sins alienate us from God. Now, it's important in this discussion to define what we mean when we say a sin is a sin is a sin. A sin is sin only in the sense that various sins equally alienate us from God. But certainly some sins are worse than others. It would be hard to say with a straight face that gossip or disobeying parents is as much of an offense as cold-blooded murder. The only real similarity is that God is so holy that any sin, large or small, keeps us just as far from him and just as unqualified to enter his kingdom without forgiveness and atonement. I hope that helps. We'll be right back.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org.
Would a loving God send people to hell? That's another in our series. Today we're doing a variety of different kinds of Bible questions. Would a loving God send people to hell? This perhaps is one of the most disturbing questions people ask, or one they're disturbed about. Christians often find themselves intimidated in the midst of conversations which challenge the credibility of the Bible, especially when the subject of hell is brought up, and that's certainly understandable. On a first glance, the idea of somebody spending eternity separated from God or from anything good does indeed sound like the judgment of a vindictive deity. At the same time, I have found a response that I think invites skeptics to look beneath their own surface reactions. Observe the following sample conversation. Skeptic says, "I simply cannot and will not believe in a God who would send people to hell." And I say then, "Well, what about heaven?" "How's that?" "Well, heaven. Can you believe in a God who would send people to heaven?" "Yes." "Oh, yes, of course." "And who will God allow into heaven?" "Everybody." "Everybody." Have you noticed that? You ask who should be in heaven? Everybody should be in heaven. Think about that. Racists are going to heaven. Murderers are going to heaven. How about rapists? Will Adolf Hitler be in heaven? Sure doesn't sound like much of a heaven anymore, does it? Isn't heaven supposed to be a place where we're free from people who can harm us? You'd think at the very least that's what heaven would be like. And the person says, "Well, okay, I guess not everybody will be in heaven." "Okay, well then where do the other people go?" Doesn't God seem more just and therefore more loving to not allow human beings to get away with evil without some kind of accountability? Well, yeah, I suppose. Okay, well then, what about the fact that all of us, in our hearts at least, have harbored evil thoughts? Thoughts of unprovoked anger, bitterness, selfishness. You see, when all is said and done, the loving God will either find a way to forgive us for the fact that we have all sinned and deliver us from this sin, or banish forever from his presence those uninterested in taking responsibility for the evil side of their natures. Make no mistake, a loving God places people in both heaven and hell. Well, there's a very interesting movie being made called The Flag, and the producers of this movie are going to join us when we return to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to KCBQ. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. The Flag is a film about honor and respect. It tells the story of our country's cherished symbol from a veteran's point of view, explaining what the American flag means to those who have made that ultimate sacrifice, and of course the sacrifice that their families make as well. What better way to honor Veterans Day than to welcome two special guests involved with the program? Dave Auspach was in the United States Army Special Forces in Vietnam. He is an actor and has been on ABC's All My Children, along with many other programs, and many films, including Changing Hands and The Editor. The Flag Project is written by him and produced by him. Dave is also a member of the Veterans in Film and Television and a board member of the nonprofit Vets on Set. John Duffy, who's also joining us, is also an actor, producer, and line producer of independent films. His projects have included television programs and television commercials, movies. He's also acted in plays such as Time of Your Life. He co-founded the nonprofit Vets on Set, whose mission is to assist military veterans in finding employment in the film and television industries. He has also line produced training videos for the USMC. John Duffy and David Auspach, welcome to our program.
Hello. Bob, how you doing? This is John Duffy.
John, nice to meet you. Now, John, were you in the military also? I know that Dave was. Are you a vet yourself?
No, I'm not. A friend came to me, Dave Rosen, with the concept of putting together Vets on Set. My dad was in the U.S. Army. He was an Irish immigrant who came during the Great Depression and became an American citizen and fought in the Philippines. So when he brought me this idea, it was something that just resonated, that here was a chance for us to be able to give something back to veterans who do so much for us. So that's why I got involved in creating Vets on Set.
Well, that is wonderful. I think you and I have something in common. I was not in the military either. I came out of that the late 60s, early 70s era. Everybody was protesting the Vietnam War, and I didn't really know what I was talking about. As I got older and my convictions became more mature, my respect for the military just went up. every single year. And absolutely, I think it's wonderful that you're doing this to serve us. I did want to ask you, I think our audience would be interested to know, what is the difference between a producer and a line producer?
Well, just on a film basis, there's many different types of producers, executive producers, creative producers. The line producer is pretty much the hands-on management. So I'm responsible for everything from the budget to the scheduling to hiring the crew, renting the equipment. So basically the buck stops with me. I'm have to bring the film in on time and on budget, and that's my job. So I kind of manage everything.
Okay. And now let's go ahead and introduce Dave. Dave Alspett, welcome to our program.
Hello.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Fine. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing very well. Now, you served in Vietnam. Did you see actual combat, or what was your was your role in the Vietnam War?
I was on a signal intelligence team.
A SEAL intelligence team.
Signal,
wow. Signal intelligence team.
We gathered intelligence data. Signal intelligence data.
Okay. Were you there? I know Vietnam lasted a long time. Was it the early part of the war or the latter part of the war? I think that was a whole 10 years we were in Vietnam.
Well, theoretically, I wasn't there.
Okay.
I came home. I was there for off and on for 3 years, and I came home in 1963.
Oh, in 1963. Okay. Nope. And now, I'm sure you have a lot of friends who were in Vietnam longer than that. Have you heard many stories? One thing that always concerned me is the way our country treated the Vietnam vets when they returned, at least in the latter part of the war when it became more unpopular. I think it's the only war in our history where people were treated so disrespectfully.
Yes, and I felt a lot of that myself because a lot of people knew I had been there. And I felt it when I was a struggling young actor in New York back in the late 60s.
Now, so had you been an actor before you went into the military service and then resumed acting, or was acting something you started for the first time after the military?
Actually, I was doing stunt work in an Aqua show prior to enlisting in the military. And I was also a competitive skier, so I wanted to be in the ski troops, which led me into the Special Forces operation, but I ended up in the jungles instead of on a ski slope.
Wow. Now, would you say that you're committed to, is the film work that you do now for the rest of your life, is it going to be related to the military, or are you still doing a variety of projects?
I do a variety of projects as an actor and as a writer, but the stuff that's really close to my heart and is anything that I can put out there that'll support the military.
Okay. Now, I saw your trailer for The Flag that's there. I should tell our audience, right now the movie isn't complete, but there is a trailer that's been put up there, and it has been screened for the American Legion Post 43 in Hollywood.
Yes.
And the Veterans in Film and Television, which is an organization of 1,000 military veterans in Hollywood, and it's going to run in the L.A. Film School this weekend, or I guess already did this weekend, during the GI Film Fest. How has this been received?
Excellent. Everybody's very excited about it. Been getting a lot of feedback. We're hoping to raise the balance of the money that we need to finish the film so we can get it out there. And we're going to be sharing the profits of this with several veterans charities and support groups, including the American Soldier Network, which is run by Annie Nelson out of Orange County, also the Gary Sinise Foundation, and then other charities would be the Children of Fallen Veterans and Disabled Veterans.
Now, from the trailer, it looked like, and correct me if I'm mistaken, it looks like this is a documentary film, not a film with actors in it?
It's a docudrama.
Docudrama, okay. Yeah. So there is like a, is it a story based on a real-life incident or just
yes.
kind of a true-to-life story? Okay, tell us a little bit about this story.
Well, the incident happened quite a few years back on a college campus where two young students, protesting as they are allowed to do, were going to burn the American flag in their protest, and they're confronted by a Vietnam veteran who confronts them, and it's quite a confrontation, but he talks them down, and they learn a lesson, and then in the interim, while they're folding the flag in the 13 folds, a lot of people believe that the 13 folds are for the original 13 colonies, which is not true. Every single fold of that flag has a very distinct meaning, and we do a freeze frame in the film and explain every single fold and what it is.
Well, that's fascinating, because I think most people would have assumed, like you said, that it represented 13. Without going through all 13 of them, can you tell us what a couple of those folds represent?
It's pretty lengthy, Bob. The one thing I can tell you is one of the things we also show in the film, or teach in the film, basically, is the origination of the 21-gun salute and the 21 steps at the unknown soldier, where that came from.
Oh, that is interesting. Maybe just an abbreviated version. I think our audience would be interested in this.
Well, I can tell you that the 21-gun salute and the 21 steps at the unknown soldier is the total of 1776.
Really? Oh, how interesting. Boy, I'm fascinated already. Now, when's your projected time? And John, feel free to jump in with any of these. When's the projected release date? I know the film's still being made, but when are you hoping that it'll be completed by, at least? What are you targeting?
Well, we're hoping to get it out early next year. We want to retail it across the country, and it'll also be shown in film festivals. Some people have suggested that it would be a great teaching film for school systems. But other than that, we hope to get this thing out and into the marketplace early next year.
Now, I know, obviously, you've been concerned about your brothers in the military for a long time. What would you say, Dave, was the seminal moment when you just said, okay, I've decided I've got to make this movie?
Well, about 3 or 4 years ago, all of this came to fruition, if you might say. I was watching a film on television, and I got to talking to an old friend of mine in Florida who's also a Vietnam veteran, and he said, you know, he brought it up and said, we've got to tell these stories. We've got to show the American people, and especially our youth, you know, that the military, the veterans are being disrespected in other ways, not just the way we were when we came back from Vietnam. One of those ways is by disrespecting the American flag, using it, burning it, just degrading it, doing whatever. The American flag is the symbol of our country, and it means a lot. A lot of American soldiers, men and women, have died fighting for that flag, and it's totally disrespectful to any. Doesn't mean that they can't do it. I mean, we fought in wars, so they have the right to do these things.
Yeah, isn't that the irony? The very freedom of speech, where they'd say, I have a right to burn the flag, which I think is just horrendous, but they would say they have the right. They yeah. only have the right because people like you have gone and put things on the line for them. It's just terrible.
It's disrespectful, and I guess it's myself and other veteran friends of mine, it's time for us to fight back in that respect. And the best way for us to do it is through the entertainment medium.
You know, another thing, Dave, that just boils my oil is when I hear people like with Iraq or Afghanistan, and I understand that people can have different opinions, and that's fine, but they'll talk as if our military is doing these horrendous atrocities, like they're compared to the Nazis, and then they'll give this little obligatory. However, I want to say that even though I'm against the war, I'm for the troops. But there's nothing they say that really sounds like they are for the troops. It just seems like it's a little obligatory disclaimer that they give.
It's very hypocritical in many respects. An example is, I think I read somewhere, well, it was last year, I guess, where more people were killed on the streets of Chicago than in Iraq in a given week or month.
Oh, I'd rather be in Iraq under the protection of our military than in Chicago in the middle of the night any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
That makes two of us.
John, I want to bring you back in the conversation. What is your participation in this project? How long have you and Dave known each other? What got you interested in this?
Well, me and Dave have been friends for a few years now, 5 years. Time keeps flying. And we kind of have common interests, common belief systems, and even though we've had different experiences, I've learned a lot from Dave, and he approached me with this project originally to help him line produce it, which is what I do, and so I started helping put it together on that side, and then as it got closer to it, somebody who was supposed to direct it came out of it and wasn't able to do it, so I stepped up and I directed the teaser that we have on our website right now with Jack Scalia, who's an actor who played, you know, pretty much does the whole introduction to the project, and then we interviewed some other people. So I directed as well as line produced the teaser that's up on our website, theflagdonations.weebly.com. And so that was how that I came together with it. And then we have some other projects that me and Dave, Dave also has another script that he wrote that I'm a feature film that I'll be involved with helping him line produce as well. So that was my involvement.
Now, you're both actors and producers. Do both of you also play a role in the movie?
Dave will play a role in the movie. I've kind of, in both this one and the other one, I've kind of moved primarily behind the scenes as a line producer and a producer, although occasionally, you know, somebody will ask me to do something, but I've kind of put that pretty much secondary for what I do nowadays.
Do you find you enjoy producing more than acting, or do you ever miss acting?
Yes, a little bit. I miss it at different times. I mean, I think my skill set as a line producer is something I enjoy. Once again, is being able to motivate a whole crew, unite people to achieve a common goal, and I got great. You know, I get along with people really well, so it's being able to unite everybody to achieve a mission together. So I enjoy doing that.
I'm here with John Duffy and David Auspach, related to the film The Flag, and this is really a special moment for the audience because we're catching a couple of producers and actors in the middle of a movie being made. And all of you at home can actually participate in the making of this film. You can give donations, which they're going to need to make it come to life. The film carries a budget of $50,000. The monies will be used to produce, market, and distribute the film. And the film will be sold through retail outlets around the country, as well as various websites. A portion of the profits will be donated to various veterans charities, such as Disabled Veterans, Children of Fallen Soldiers. And in addition, the film will be shown at promotional events to raise funds for various veteran support groups at no cost to them. John, can you give a website there where people can go to, or a phone number they can call? Because I'm hoping that there are people listening right now, maybe even some veterans listening right now, or especially people that just appreciate veterans and what they've done for our country, who would participate in this.
The website is theflagdonations.weebly, which is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y.com. And that, if they go to that website, they can make donations. They also will see the teaser reel that we filmed that I directed with Jack Scalia, as well as some interviews with some of the organizations like the American Soldiers Network, Annie Nelson and other people who basically support the project. So they'll be able to watch that and see what our direction is and what we're trying to accomplish with this as well. And any help and any support is greatly appreciated.
What do you think the length of the film will be when it's completed?
We're looking at 30 to 35 minutes as the actual short film. The teaser that we have on the website now is, I think, 3 minutes.
Well, 30 to 35 minutes, and yet it's a docudrama, so you're going to be like Rod Serling. You're going to pack quite a story, but in a shorter period of time.
That's correct. And then, once again, the distribution, I mean, there's also, besides the regular distribution channels, we'll probably have it on the military channel. We'll probably have it through the Pentagon Network, which is a channel that goes out to 30 million homes, as well as being shown at a military bases throughout the world. So we'll also be able, and then we'll also have it shown at the GI Film Festival, which we participated in the other night with attended here in Hollywood, and they have that GI Film Festival every year in May in Washington D.C. And now they're going to be having it in November at the LA Film School, which interestingly has over 400 military veterans attending the school, all coming out to work in the film and television industries. So it's a growing body of military veterans who are entering our industry, and we want to be part of helping them be successful at it.
Now, in this film, is there any discussion of, I know there's a lot of features of The Flag that are t- talked about, such as the folding. But is there anything about the history of the flag? Because our flag has almost had as interesting of a history as our country itself.
Let me turn this question over to Dave as to what's in the film and whether there is any content on the history, since he wrote it and can speak to it even further.
Okay.
Yeah, Bob?
Yeah, Dave, tell us a little bit about what kind of history of the flag is discussed in your film.
Actually, it's more up to date. We don't go into the history of, you know, Betsy Ross or whatnot. We do show some, we will be showing some still photos of the flag in various aspects from the Civil War all the way up through Korea, Vietnam, World War II. We will show some of those. And we also will be talking to actual veterans from World War II, from Korea, and from Vietnam, and from Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're giving their point of view. All we're asking them is, what does the American flag mean to you? And we're letting them tell that in their own words.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Like the first flag from the Continental Congress, that one didn't even have stars in it at all, did it?
No. No. In fact, the flag that flew over Fort Sumter was huge. Somebody told me that it was like 18 feet across, I think somebody said. I haven't checked yet, but I'd love to have a picture of that.
Yeah, and of course our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. I remember when I first heard the story of Francis Scott Key in a naval battle in the War of 1812, when he's on this boat and he's not even sure if we're winning or losing, and he wonders if a ship has gone down, and then in the midst of the smoke, he sees the American flag. I mean, that must have just sent chills down him.
There's a little pre-story to that. From what I understand, is Francis Scott Key and another gentleman went to the British commander to get a young doctor released who had been a prisoner. And the young doctor had apparently saved a lot of the British soldiers' lives as a doctor, and was captured then by another British outfit. And they had letters. They took letters to the commander asking for his release because of all the good he had done for the wounded British soldiers. And from what I understand, the commander did sign those papers, and the next day is when they attacked Fort Sumter.
No kidding.
That's a story I read not too long ago. I was going to try to incorporate some of that into the script, but then it got away from the actual story of, because we want to impress upon people what the American flag means to veterans and their families and why it should be respected.
Now, do you have as much interaction with people who are currently in the military as well as veterans?
Oh yeah, even last night we were with quite a few active military officers, both from the Army and Marines and Navy and Air Force at the GI Film Festival. And I do a lot of work with Annie Nelson. In fact, I'm on her Celebrity Board of Advisors at the American Soldier Network, and we do a lot of work with the Wounded Warrior Program.
Well, you know, we all love to go to movies, and we all admire the action heroes, but the real action heroes are our soldiers. I think for some people, it's almost difficult to relate. This question is for either one of you. What causes somebody to just say, you know, I'm a young man, I'm a young woman these days, I have my whole life ahead of me, but I'm going to choose to actually put my life on the line. What motivates a person to do something like that?
Conscience, maybe. I don't know. When I initially joined the military, it was basically because my father gave me a choice. He said, get a job, go be in the military, or get out of my house.
But I'm imagining as you've gotten older, you don't regret that decision. I'm imagining if you had it to do again, you probably would have done it for purer reasons.
I tell you, it educated me. I became almost very mature overnight. I learned a lot. I learned discipline. It is probably one of the best things that I ever did in my life.
What is the morale like in the military these days, just at this point in our country's history? And again, either one of you can jump in with these.
To my understanding, one of the sad things is a lot of the boys that are coming back, there's a very, very high suicide rate with a lot of the young men that are coming back from Afghanistan.
Okay, what would be the predominant reason? The horror of war itself, or is it because they don't feel that their country really has their back anymore? What would be the reason for that?
I think it's all of the above, Bob. But they don't feel they're being supported. They put their life on the line. They've seen horrific things. They come home to a lot of people or that just don't appreciate them or what they did or why they did it. They did it for them. A lot of people just can't conceive that. But once you've been in the military and once you've gone through any part of that, I don't know. It's hard for me to express, but it's one of the greatest feelings of accomplishment that I think any man or woman can go through.
Yeah, and doesn't it seem that a lot of times when you hear the average person talking about war that has no experience in the military, particularly when you're talking to a pacifist, and I know pacifists, I know they mean well, but doesn't it just sound at times like they just don't know what the heck they're talking about?
In many respects, look, I respect their right to protest war. Nobody likes it. I don't know a soldier that I've ever known personally, or including myself, that loves to go get shot at.
Or that loves to shoot others, but it's because we
Either way, we
hate war and we hate the fact that evil people would want to attack us. That we have this desire to defend our country.
But a lot of people don't understand. It's in our DNA. It's from the beginning of time. We've been at war for one reason or another.
Human beings are very violent by nature, and so we've got to be savvy about that and practical about that.
So are animals, if you want to really stretch it out. Insects, plants, they fight for territory. But it's just in our DNA, and we're a certain group of us are willing to go do what we have to do so the rest of us can live in peace.
And yet, as the most intelligent animal on the planet, we don't use that intelligence because we tie the hands of our soldiers. It seems like in Afghanistan these last couple of years, people practically had to consult a lawyer before they could even shoot at anybody.
Yeah, that's sad. I heard some stories about recently about some of the Marines weren't even allowed to carry ammunition. But that wasn't in. I think that was in Libya. One of the newscasts reported that.
Haven't there also been cases where somebody is accused of some kind of massacre, and yet the only witnesses are the enemy? And it seems like our government would give the enemy the benefit of the doubt, and yet our soldiers are guilty till proven innocent.
I know, that's pretty sad. It's become too political.
Yeah,
too political.
It really has. Well, John,
politicians are trying to cover their, you know what's in the young soldiers that go out there and put their life on the line are the ones that end up getting the short end of the stick.
It sure does. What can we do? I know that sometimes I'll just be at a restaurant or something and I'll see a soldier and I'll just come up and thank them for their service, and they really seem to appreciate it. And
yet
But that's such an easy thing for me to do when you consider all that they have done. It seems like we could probably do so much more that would just take the most minimal amount of effort. What more could we do to support our troops better? Obviously, donating to a film like this is one such thing. What other projects can people involve themselves in?
There's so many projects out there. But if you see a soldier, a Marine, anybody in the military, if you have an opportunity to visit some of the veterans' hospitals, and just spend a minute or 2 minutes just talk to these guys and listen to them and let them tell you their story. Or they may not even want to tell you the story, but if they know you're there and they know you care, it's amazing how far that will go with a military guy, especially one who's laying in a military hospital.
Just the thought of somebody bravely serving our country and then coming home and maybe feeling suicidal because on one side there were the horrors of war, and on the other side, they felt their country didn't actually have their back. John, give out that website one last time.
The website?
Yes.
For us again is theflagdonations.weebly.com.
Okay, John Duffy and David Alsbeck, you two are a couple of great guys, and thank you so much for honoring us by being on our program. We look forward to seeing your film. The film, once again, is The Flag. You can look at the trailer online now, but the entire project, we're hoping it's out a year from now. John Duffy and David Alsbeck, God bless both of you.
The same to you, and thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.